You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
On the first Saturday in May in 2006, Edgar Prado rode Barbaro to victory in the most celebrated horse race in the world, the Kentucky Derby. 2 weeks later, in the Preakness, Barbaro broke his right ankle just 100 yards after the start, and that eventually led to his death 8 months later. In his new book, My Guy Barbaro, Edgar Prado recounts Barbaro's bittersweet life, as well as Edgar's own journey from poverty in Peru to a career of over 6,000 victories. The book, written with the help of John Eisenberg, is published by Harper, and it is my great pleasure to welcome Edgar Prado to the show today. Hello.
Thank you. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Were you surprised that Adriano, your horse in this most recent Derby, came in 19th?
Yeah, a little disappointed. I was looking for a better performance, unfortunately.
What goes wrong? Because this is a horse that many people thought had a chance.
Yeah, it's bred for go the distance and run all day. But it seems like he likes the poly track or the turf a lot better than the dirt.
And that was a consideration with Barbaro as well.
Yes, but Barbaro was special, you know. Barbaro, he can take a sloppy track, turf, dirt, even a highway.
Although they did consider limiting him to turf, didn't they?
Yes, yes.
What is it? Why is one horse responds better to one and others another? The horses who do really good in mud after a lot of rain.
Well, it depends on the conformation of the horse. The hoof has a lot to do with it. A small hoof is a little better for horses in the sloppy track. Big hoof, they run better in the turf. But other than breeding, you know, the horse is breeding for the grass or dirt. But when it comes to places, the ability of the horse, the good horses, they overcome almost anything. And that's why they're separating good horses or champions from a regular horse.
You said after the recent Kentucky Derby that you were too upset by what happened to Eight Bells to talk about it. Because it had special significance for you after what had happened with Barbaro and the Preakness? Or do you think all the jockeys felt that way?
Well, I felt real bad because it was like a flashback, you know, from the day of the Preakness. And see the ambulance rush to try to save the horse.
So you see that out of your peripheral vision while you're still
That was after we pull up, and that field was about 40.
Because it was after the finish line.
Right, the finish line. It was about 40 to 50 yards in front of me. So, and I took my time to see if everything was okay with the field, but unfortunately it wasn't.
Go ahead.
Yeah, but I think we all the jockeys, we had the same feeling, you know? We have the same concern. For the animals, you know, and definitely them for our fellow riders, too.
Well, I'm sure that you wouldn't be riding horses if you didn't love horses. People are attracted to the horses first, and then
absolutely,
they develop the skills.
Definitely, we are horse lovers, and we really care about the horses, and we try to the horse come back nice and safe.
And they all have different personalities?
Absolutely, like humans.
So what happens when you just you've never ridden a horse before and you're just going into a race? Do you try to establish some kind of a connection?
Yeah, you have to just listen very careful, you know, the way the horse is breathing, the way the horse's actions are, you know, and how he's handling the rest of the competition. If you are on the horse only one time, you know.
Do they let you know that they're happy with the way you're sitting or they're
not happy
with the way you're sitting?
Not only that, it's most when you touch the mouth, you know. When you touch the horse's mouth, they can feel that you're pulling too hard or that you're giving too much rein or you're pulling too much to the right or left. It's kind of, we had the sense in the hands.
And what was that the case with Barbaro? Did you develop some kind of rapport with him? Did you have to whip him ever?
No, I think the only time I whipped him was in Florida Derby because he was struck by by the lights in the finish line. And before that, I don't think I ever touched him, you know. Mm-hmm. He was winning so easy. He was doing everything so easy, so it wasn't a reason for him.
And in the case of the Derby, he won by 6.5 lengths. Mm-hmm. That's a surprise when you're racing against horses of that quality.
Definitely. That was a very tough group of horses that year. And I don't even hear it. I only show on the stick because it was so many things that could distract him, you know, and he handled everything very well.
There are a number of people who feel that the Derby at 20 horses is just has too many horses. That if a race is going to be that important, you should limit it to a smaller number.
Yeah, but at the same time, it won't be fair for a lot of the owners and breeders that they want to participate in this very important race. You know,
well,
it's
if a horse
tradition, it's if, tradition of the American.
If a horse doesn't break well at the start, it can be blocked from getting to the front, even if it's the best horse in the race.
That's what not only the best horse win the race. Sometimes Horebic had the best trip, and that's what it makes it so difficult and so important. And that is one of the best races in America.
You were praised for pulling up Barbaro quickly, which gave him a chance to fight for his life. Do you think that the young jockey on Eight Bells could have done something similar and saved her life? Because he's come under a lot of criticism.
Well, you know, I've been riding for 25, almost 30 years, you know. I think the experience is different than the kid that rode the horse. But the feeling never giving the kid any indication that she was going to break down or pull a muscle, take it by the step. As you can watch the race, she was galloping out and suddenly went down. And that could have happened to me, too, you know.
And it happened after the race. The horse came in second.
The horse ran good, and they don't give you no warning. It suddenly went down.
Actually, Barbaro stumbled coming out of the gate in the Kentucky Derby, didn't he?
Well, you know, I rode Barbaro 5 times before that. So I know what kind of horse he was, what kind of power did he have coming out of the gate. So when he didn't show me that kind of power, so I know it was something wrong. And that's why I pulled him up right away.
Do you think that Eight Bells might have been hurt because it was on dirt rather than... If it had been turf, might it have been different?
Which one? Eight Bells?
Yeah.
I don't know. She's always been running in the dirt. So she seemed like she go to different racetracks and handle everything very well.
But I guess thoroughbred horses are vulnerable to that sort of thing anyway because they have such fine legs.
Well, you know, like I said, some horses, you run them in the turf and they hate it. You know, they don't like it at all. So, or some horses, you put them in the fast track and they don't like it. I guess if it's going to be 3,000 horses born in every year, someone will like it there and someone will like it turf or the other way around.
But the way we breed them is to have very thin legs, very fine ankles, and there's a lot of weight. The rest of the horse's body, I would think that we're really putting an awful lot of pressure on the bottom of their legs.
I think that's the way they're bred, you know, and it's nature, and I don't think we can change what nature is creating.
My guest is Edgar Prado, the great jockey, who's written with the help of John Eisenberg, My Guy Barbaro, A Jockey's Journey Through Love, Triumph, and Heartbreak with America's Favorite Horse. It's published by Harper's. How many horses do you ride in a typical year?
Around 1,000 horses.
And do you get attached to certain ones?
Definitely. I really like to all the horses that I ride, you know. But to get personal attached is real hard. You know, 1,000 horses, you know.
But you, in the case of Barbaro, for example, you actually spotted him when you weren't on him. And you did everything possible to convince his trainer that you should ride him.
Well, I didn't say I did everything impossible, but I really throw my name in the hat, and Mr. Michael had it would keep me in mind if he ever wanted to do any changes, and I'm glad he chose me, and because I was very impressed by the way that horse run and the lot of futurity, and I said I was happy to be one of them.
So you, while you're riding one horse, you notice what the other horses are doing, and you think, hey, that would be a nice horse to ride sometime.
Absolutely, you know. That's, when you see greatness and you see something special, you see different from the other bunch of horses running at that particular day.
How do you keep in shape? You have to avoid putting on weight at the same time. Maintain a lot of strength, don't you?
Yeah, I like to go to the gym just to do you know, cardio and lose some weight. You know, I cannot wait doing too much muscle because, you know, that's a little heavy for me. And working in the mornings and try to get along with the horses and ran the afternoon. So combination of both them.
But does it take a lot of strength? Because I know I've been tired when I've ridden horses. Maybe it's because I'm a bad rider.
Nah. Well, you know, it's definitely, you know, it's at the beginning of your career, you're always going to get tired. It's kind of hard to get fit. But when you ride for so many years, you catch the rhythm.
Well, how many years have you been riding? You'll be 41 next month.
Yeah. I started riding in 1984.
I'm not going to do the math right now, but you were very young at the time.
Yeah, 24 years.
And that was in Peru?
I started riding in Peru, yeah, late October 1984.
How did you get into riding? You were...
Well, my father was involved with horses. Then I had two older brothers that ride horses. So I guess... it was in the family.
Your youngest of 11 children.
Yeah.
Was it rough growing up in Lima?
Yeah. At the beginning, yeah, definitely was very tough for the rest of the family.
What do your siblings do now? What are your brothers and sisters?
Well, I have one brother live in Maryland. Actually, two live in Maryland. My other brother is still riding in Philadelphia. My sister working too. And the rest of the family is still in Peru.
And I'm sure they live a little better because you send some money back.
Right. Thanks, guy. You know, I'm in the position to do that.
Do you still maintain a relationship with Barbaro's owners?
Yes. Yes, actually, I was with Barbaro's Roy and Gretchen. It was Friday morning because they do a new statue of Barbaro life-size right in front of the Kentucky... Churchill Downs in Kentucky.
What about Barbaro's brother, Nicanor?
He's now he's back in Fair Hills and he arrived to Michael Matt's barn and hopefully he continued to do what Barbaro started.
Uh-huh. So is there a possibility you'll be riding him as well?
I hope so. We're looking forward.
When you came to the United States, did you have you've been riding in Lima. Did that establish you as a jockey to be taken seriously?
Well, you know, that was my dream, you know. When I started riding, I said I want to be the best that I can in my profession. And I started riding, and I was watching a lot of the races here in America. I was watching the Kentucky, the Breeders' Cup, and I was following Eddie Shoemaker, Eddie Arcaro, Cordero, and all those guys. And that was always my dream to come here and try to accomplish my dream.
Well, Eddie Shoemaker raced until he was quite old. Yeah. You're going to be 41. Do you plan to ride into your 50s or 60s?
I try to ride maybe another 7-8 years, you know, hopefully staying healthy and still having the support of the people that stand behind me.
Was it hard to break into the American racing scene?
For me, yeah, it was. Some jockeys different from none, but for me it was a little hard because I don't speak the language. I don't have no many people that I know. I've come by myself. And, you know, learn to adjust to the style of riding here.
It's different than it would be in Peru.
Yeah.
Or in the rest of the world or just the United States?
Well, you know, the track is different. The track is a little faster here. Sharp turns, different jockey from all over the world. So you have to adjust to that kind of situation.
You're riding now against the best jockeys in the world. You split your time between New York and Florida,
yeah.
And many of the best jockeys work those two places because
right. That's
where the money is.
Yeah, well, we try to not only follow that, we try to follow the good horses too, try to stay with it, and that's one of the reasons why I get on Barbaro too, because Barbaro, he was going to start his campaign in Florida.
How long before you were able to establish yourself? Do you remember your first victory in the United States?
1986, in June 1986, a horse called Single Love for Manuel Asprua. It was about 5 months after I arrived. But I was winning, but I wasn't winning at the way that I was winning when I was in Peru.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, it takes, you have to win to get better mounts, and
absolutely.
You have to get better mounts to win, so
you
you're caught in some kind of a problem.
Win more to get better horses. And then you go to the next level to go to different tracks and be in one of the finest tracks in America, New York.
How long before you felt comfortable about bringing your wife here?
A couple years later, because at the beginning it was real hard, you know. I wasn't making much money. and you know, here everything is so expensive. Yeah, my wife, she understood the situation. She waited, and when it was time, we got together and we started a family.
Your mother passed away not long before the Derby in 2006. Did you consider not racing?
Yes. Yes, I crossed my mind.
Because you could lose focus.
Yeah, I was thinking too much of my mother. I was thinking, you know, that what else I could have done to bring my mother here and give a nice, a fair chance to live with all the American treatment. But unfortunately, they denied the visa and the American consul in Peru. But I thought about it, but then I said, listen, if I have a more spare time by myself, it's going to be real hard. So I put myself together and got to work.
Although you initially told Gretchen Jackson that you were unsure whether you wanted to ride Barbaro in the Derby.
Yeah.
Why?
And I didn't tell her that I wasn't going to ride Barbaro. I was trying to see what my other horses performed. I have about three other horses that were supposed to run in the Wood Memorial. One was supposed to run in the Toyota Bluegrass. So I want to see if the other horses run good or not, so we can make my decision.
Well, before you rode Barbaro, the press used to call you the Triple Crown Killers because you kept on spoiling the opportunities for other horses to win the Triple Crown. There hasn't been a Triple Crown winner for a long time. Is that difficult because of the varying lengths of the races?
That's what it makes it so hard, you know. It makes it so hard. And they thought it was impossible to win in the 70s. And it was, three Triple Crowns a year, that decade.
So, and then nothing since.
Nothing since. But, you know, it could be because of luck, because the right horse maybe doesn't run early in their careers, or maybe they don't make it. You know, so many factors, you know.
Do you think Big Brown has a chance?
I think so. He had the right tools to become one of the Triple Crowns this year.
Who will you be riding in the Preakness and the Belmont?
I think I'll ride Tucker, a horse for Billy Matt.
Mm-hmm. Not Adriano.
No, Adriano, I think he's going to go back to the turf or poly track.
And just one more thing. Would it have been possible to have saved Barbaro even with his leg problems and keep him in stud?
Well, he really beat the leg that he broke, you know. It wasn't a problem with that. The other legs was the other problem, the laminators. So I think that...
Can you explain that, the laminating?
Yeah, the laminators is not enough blood supply to the legs, and the hoof is like our nail for ourselves. They start dying, and that's very painful for the horses. They don't want to get up, they don't want to eat, and that's why at the time when he was developing that disease, they decided to put him down.
Mm-hmm. Because even keeping him in stud, he would just have too much pain.
He couldn't get up. He couldn't put away. The only leg that he could put away on it was that leg that he broke down. The other three that have laminated.
You say in the book that Barbaro stood on grass too long at the Preakness with his saddle on before the race. Does that really change how a horse perceives the ground?
I think so. Horses, they are very particular individuals. They can feel. If an earthquake is coming, they can feel before we know it. Mm. So you know how they are.
But you must have felt it right away because you pulled him back immediately after.
Well, he was very happy in the post parade, and before the race, he was very excited, and probably that could contribute to an incident, or maybe it was just pure bad luck, you know.
Well, it's did an amazing thing, and you are obviously an amazing athlete. And I want to thank you so much for being with us. Edgar Prado, who's written with the help of John Eisenberg, My Guy Barbaro, which is published by Harper's. I've been asked to ask you another question. What do you look for when you look at a horse?
Well, personality, I guess, you know. Horses with personality, they can overcome a lot of things, you know.
So you can. What kind of personality does a horse have to have that would lead you to want to ride it or think that the horse has a chance?
Well, when you first start getting on a horse in the morning, you know, then you get on it and you ask him to do things and they ask him. But at the same time, he have his own personality that if you push him too much, he say, well, I'm doing what I have to do. Don't tell me why, you know. So, and the ability, definitely the ability to run, you know, this to fight and to be a leader, you know, to love the competition. Some horses, no matter who is next to, they love to compete and they like to be in front or when the dirt hit and they don't care, they always move forward. So they're not afraid to anything.
And then there are the horses that like to go in front immediately, and then some there are the like ones that, who want to wait until...
They don't want any other horse to go by. So it's a lot of things that you have to look into.
Edgar Prado splits his time between New York and Hollywood, Hollywood, Florida, mm-hmm. that is. His book, My Guy Barbaro, published by Harper's. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
If you want to hear more about horse racing, on our show page at WNYC.org, we have a link to a recent interview I did with the filmmakers of the first Saturday, in May, a documentary about training racehorses the year that Barbaro won the Derby. Up next, on our Political Projections film series, we look into remakes and how changing political climates affect the newer versions of old films. Also, by now you've heard of the disaster in Burma where a cyclone has killed more than 20,000 people, and the count is going up still. On tomorrow's show, we'll talk a little bit about the limited press freedom in Burma and how that affects a tragic situation like this and whether there's anything you can do to help. This is WNYC and WNYC.org.